This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, confirmation hearings are underway for Donald Trump's nominee for Attorney General, Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, and his selection for Secretary of Homeland Security, retired Marine General John Kelly. Now, Democrats have stated their intentions are to stop the confirmation of Senator Jeff Sessions. Are they succeeding? We'll talk about that with former Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty. I'll also be checking in with William Smith, a former member of Senator Sessions' staff who has been in today's hearings. Also, could the effort to repeal Obamacare be in jeopardy? A handful of moderate Republican senators are putting the repeal at risk by demanding their party adopt a replacement before repealing. The problem is the legislative clock is ticking. Ohio Congressman and former chairman of the Freedom Caucus, Jim Jordan, explains. And we may check in on Republicans in the Bluegrass State, the state of Kentucky, who are off to the races. For the first time since 1920, the GOP captured the state house this last fall, giving them control of the legislature and the executive branch, and they've wasted no time in advancing the sanctity of human life, passing two major pro-life bills, the fetal pain bill or the 20-week abortion ban, and an ultrasound bill. The governor signed both into law, and the ACLU filed suit to stop the ultrasound bill just moments after the governor signed it into law. We may talk about that a little bit later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, as I mentioned, the attorney general nominee for Donald Trump, Jeff Sessions, is in the spotlight on Capitol Hill. In fact, the hearing is continuing as we speak. The Alabama Republican senator testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee, stating that he would uphold the law. He respected the Constitution. That's a novel idea, considering what's been happening in the Justice Department for the last 8 years. Well, someone who knows Senator Sessions well and was in the hearing room today joins us from Capitol Hill. William Smith worked for Senator Sessions for nearly a decade and is now chief of staff for Congressman Gary Palmer. By the way, William was also the first African-American staffer, senior counsel on the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. William, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony. Good to be with you.
Your sense today on the first day of hearings, confirmation hearings for Senator Sessions?
My sense is that this hearing has gone very well for Senator Sessions. He is doing a fabulous job. Nobody's laid a glove on him. I think what you're seeing is that his colleagues know that he is a nice guy and know that he believes in equal justice under the law, so the hearing's going very well right now.
The atmosphere in the room, what's it been like today? Is it, you know, the Democrats have made for the first time, actually one of his own colleagues, even CNN calls this unprecedented, that Senator Booker was going to speak out against this nomination. Was there a sense of tension in the room?
You know, early on, there might have been a sense of tension, but I think once Senator Sessions started answering the questions, he started demonstrating his beliefs in equal justice under law, I think the tensions went down. I think most of the tensions came from related protesters inside the room trying to draw attention so that they could raise money off of this hearing.
Now, you have you've spoken out in favor of this nomination. You worked for Senator Sessions for nearly a decade. What's your sense of the, you know, when you hear the things that have been said about him in the press, when you hear those things and you know somebody and they're completely different than what they're being described, I mean, that has an effect on you.
Yeah, it's a totally disappointing situation to hear these attacks being made against an outstanding man, a man who loves people, a man who cares for people, a man who has no racial bias, no racial animus. So the people who know Senator Sessions, people who spent hours and hours with him, these people who have had good conversations with him, everybody knows that he's not a racist. It's only the people who've never met him, the people who believe that they can do something politically expedient right now, including raising money for the different organizations, who are going out and attacking this fine man. Mm.
Well, we're going to continue to watch this very closely. I thought he handled himself very well today and continues to do so. William Smith, thanks so much for giving us an update from Capitol Hill.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. William Smith, he's actually chief of staff for Congressman Gary Palmer now, after working for nearly a decade for Senator Sessions. All right. Joining us now is Paul McNulty. He's a former deputy attorney general under George W. Bush administration. He is now the president of Grove City College, has an understanding of the inner workings of the Department of Justice, also the confirmation process, which he himself had to go through. Paul, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. I'm happy to be with you.
Have you had a chance to catch some of the confirmation hearings today?
I have. I've been listening in different times and certainly agree with William's assessment of how well Jeff is doing.
Hey, you know, that's his personality. I mean, he's very mild-mannered, calm. I've never seen him ruffled, and I've known him for probably a decade and a half. But I want to ask you this question, Paul. I mean, you prosecuted a number of the terrorists after 9/11. You know, George Bush, during his term, there was a lot of partisanship. Some of that went away after 9/11, but still you saw the partisanship that tends to dominate Capitol Hill. Has it gotten worse, in your opinion, as you look at how people from the start have responded to the nomination of Jeff Sessions?
Yeah, I think it has gotten worse. I think it's gotten worse because of the aftermath of the Trump victory. The opponents of President-elect are looking to inflict as much political damage to those who work, who'll be working with him as they can, in large measure to inflict damage on him. So I think we are right now experiencing a really low point when it comes to the partisanship. But the attacks on Republicans at the Department of Justice are not new. We've seen that before, and Senator Sessions is probably handling them as well as anybody has ever under that kind of pressure.
I want to get you to expand on that a little bit about the attacks on him. It's almost certain they've got to know they cannot stop him. They've got the only needs 51 votes to pass. 50 votes to pass, and he's gonna the 51 votes. He's gonna get that, and so it's more about damaging him in the administration by basically beating him up in the confirmation hearing.
Well, you know, I worked on the House Judiciary Committee for 8 years, and I've been through a lot of the confirmation hearings, both for myself and working with others. And the Democrat senators primarily play to the liberal base and the activist groups that hang around the room and prepare the talking points for them and do all the background research and feed all this stuff to them. And so much of that is political. It's about, sort of strengthening their political support with these organizations. And there's a certain, you know, theater to it all as a result of that. It's not necessarily even as sincere as it is about trying to say certain things and to make plays. You see with some of these people like Senator Booker and Senator Brown from Ohio, they're already making their plays for running for presidency in the 2020. Right. You know, they're looking to get attention from the most liberal activist base within the party.
Yeah, it's a little disheartening. I mean, Booker in particular, where he teamed up last year with Senator Sessions for a civil rights recognition, said it was one of the highlights of his career back in February of 2016. And now he's taking the unprecedented move, and it was co-sponsored by Senator Sessions. Two of those worked on that together. He's from New Jersey, Senator Sessions from Alabama. And now you have Senator Booker taking this unprecedented step of speaking against a colleague in that setting.
And think about what it means. I mean, when you testify against a colleague, In fact, if you testify against a nominee at all, when a nominee is making a specific statement about what he or she believes, you're saying they're a liar. I mean, what Senator Booker is saying is that he thinks Senator Sessions is lying. Lying before the United States Senate, lying under oath, lying to the American people. And yet, one thing that everybody says about Jeff Sessions is that he is a person who is honest, the way in which he just carries himself. You know, he's down to earth, humble, honest, integrity. Those are the words that are used to describe him and by people who politically disagree with him on things. And so for somebody to oppose him in that fashion, and for that not to be seen as what it is, it's calling him publicly a liar, I think just shows you the way in which our public discourse has really been coarsened and damaged badly.
Mm. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. I'm joined by former U.S. Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty, discussing the confirmation hearing of Senator Jeff Sessions. It reminds me, today, Ted Cruz said during the hearing that he was actually delighted to see the sudden interest by Democrats in upholding the law in the Attorney General's office. And he said, you know, that given their history in the past 8 years of essentially ignoring it, that was kind of interesting. Because, you know, that's you've heard that. Oh, well, will you uphold this law? Will you uphold this law? That hasn't been at the forefront of their consideration in the last year, the last 8 years, given what we've seen over at the Department of Justice. Your sense, he is confirmed. I mean, the numbers are going to be there. He's going to be confirmed. How difficult is the job going to be for him going forward, given where we see America today, what's happened in communities, the division between law enforcement and the public? How big of a job does he have before him?
Well, there's sort of good news and bad news on that. The good news is that there are a lot of career Department of Justice prosecutors, investigators, who are actually really excited about his rule of law, no-nonsense, straightforward approach. In other words, they're really excited about the fact that he's a former federal prosecutor who believes that you get up every day and you enforce the federal law vigorously. And many of these folks have felt held back over the past 8 years because there are a lot of ideological layers at the Department of Justice that have been in play. Oh, we don't want to be tough on drug traffickers. Oh, we want to make sure we're letting people out of prison if they think the sentence has been too long. Oh, we want to make sure that we are overseeing police departments and sort of micromanaging them. You know, all these agendas that have created these sort of layers of complexity of how the Department of Justice just goes about its business. And the career prosecutor, who I used to work with when I was U.S. attorney, just want to get up and enforce the law. They get into those jobs because they want to make their community safer, and they feel held back in being able to do that. So the good news is a lot of people are going to be excited about having him as the boss, and he's going to say, go out there and let's get the bad guys. Now, there are others at DOJ who have agendas, and they're going to push back on him because they're going to want to be able to selectively do certain things, and they're not going to want to do what he wants to do, and that's where the job becomes difficult.
Yeah, that is going to be a challenge, but I think he's up to that challenge. Paul, thanks so much for joining us. Out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Good to be with you. Thank you, Tony.
All right, former Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty. All right, when we come back, Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan joins us to talk about whether or not the effort to repeal Obamacare could be in trouble already. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Isn't it refreshing to have a president that isn't hostile to Christianity? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with the American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our country was founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview. There's no question about it. The Christian religion was dominant in early America, and there's a reason our country was called a Christian nation. We're going to see this rich history when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and then the other one in September. In addition, we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour, but you can do both of those tours with us if you would like to. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be our historian as he tells us about our great Christian heritage and history. For more information on either of these tours, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Truth Be Told with Nate Keller, Chief Counsel at the Center for Religious Expression.
Several states have faced a firestorm of controversy for laws prohibiting the government from punishing private entities who, for the sake of their conscience, decline to participate in wedding ceremonies for same-sex couples. Homosexual activists say such laws deny them civil rights. Although those seeking same-sex unions are still able to acquire any services they desire, this is not enough for the activists. They want to force Christians to participate in the event. In the name of tolerance, these activists seek out Christian businesses to solicit wedding services and enlist the government to shut them down for failing to submit. So, who is it then that stands to lose civil rights?
Truth Be Told from the Center for Religious Expression, clearing the path for truth. Hear more at CRELaw.org, CRELaw.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. House Speaker Paul Ryan said at a news conference earlier today that the American people are being hurt by the act known as Obamacare. It's an understatement. Ryan said Republicans have made clear that they have a replacement plan that will be patient-centered with more choices and lower cost. He said Congress is putting in place the tools needed to keep the GOP promise of repealing and replacing Obamacare immediately. However, that effort could be in danger by a handful of Republican moderate senators who are saying they want the replacement plan adopted before they repeal. The problem is the clock is ticking and Congress has only so much time to use the reconciliation budget measure to get this through. Joining me now to explain this process and give us a diagnosis on the repeal effort is our good friend Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio. Congressman Jordan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you this afternoon, Tony.
All right, well, Happy New Year. We haven't spoken since the New Year's.
You too.
Good to talk with
How's your house? You got everything?
Well, that's another program. We're still putting
well,
the
God
pieces
bless.
Back together. Hey, let's talk about this now. The Republicans determined the House is moving forward, but now we're hearing rumblings in the Senate from some moderate GOP members that, you know, they want to make sure that that replacement plan is in place. The problem is the legislative calendar says you've got to move on this by the 27th of January, or you cannot use this Budget Reconciliation Act in this period. So where do things stand?
Well, we do need to move as quickly as possible, because that's what we told the voters we're going to do and get rid of this Washington-centered approach to health care with the patient-centered one, as the speaker said, one that empowers families, doctors, patients, consumers, and empowers the market. So we do need to move in that direction, but look, we should do it right. A couple of things I'm concerned about. Let's make sure we actually repeal every bit of it, all the taxes, all the mandates, repeal the whole darn thing. And then the replacement measure should, I think, happen as quickly and as close to the same time as the repeal happens. Ideally be the same day. But and then I think finally the other question is, what's the effective date? You know, there are some in the Senate talking about a 3 or 4 year sort of off ramp on this thing. And I think it's got to be this Congress. I mean, we were elected to repeal all of it, all the taxes, do everything, get rid of the money for Planned Parenthood, frankly, everything in it. So let's do that, and let's make sure the effective date is actually this Congress. And that's what the debate's about from those of us on the conservative side here. And someone the maybe the more moderate side of Republicans got some other concerns, but I think we can get it done.
Now, when we talk about repealing in totality, the budget reconciliation vehicle that was used, bypassing the 60-vote margin needed in the Senate, did not eliminate all of Obamacare. That's going to have to be done in another measure, right? Or is there
The vast majority of it gets eliminated and repealed in the reconciliation measure.
Right. And you mentioned,
I think at a minimum, we should at the floor, the bare minimum should be the same reconciliation package we passed last Congress.
Agreed.
Where we did get rid of dollars for Planned Parenthood. We did get rid of all the taxes. We did the stuff that needs to be done that we told the voters we're going to do. We did that. Of course, it went to President Obama's desk, and he vetoed it. Now we should, at a minimum, do that, and we should add things to it that we can that are going to empower patients and families. So that's the model that we're supporting, but you can't get to that. You can't get to that until you have this budget resolution passed first, which is what's happening this week. So we want to, before that budget resolution passes, we want to make sure that what's going to happen in repeal in a few weeks down the road here is actually what I just described.
Right. And I agree with you. At a minimum, it should be what was passed out of the House and the Senate in December of 2015, the last time this was done. And it went to the president's desk, and he vetoed it. So there's, you know, from that perspective, those that voted for it last time have no excuse not to vote for it this time.
Yep, exactly right. Exactly
now,
right.
In terms of a replacement, that's going to require another piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. That, I'm certain the House can do that because the House has done this many times. The problem then becomes in the Senate, where if they can't muster the 60 votes, they may not be able to pass a replacement version. But that should not stop them from moving forward with the commitment that the Republicans have made to the American people to repeal Obamacare.
No, well said. And understand, if we repeal it, you're going to have a much better market in place, and some of the things that can, I think, happen at Health and Human Services, particularly when Dr. Price is sworn in as the new head of that agency. I think you can have the market offer the kind of products patients really and consumers really want. Like right now, we got all these mandates, and you sort of have this uniform policy out there that drives up the cost for everyone. Mm-hmm. Why not allow the market to focus more on health savings accounts, allow different kinds of policies, allow maybe the shopping from across state lines to purchase
right.
the kind of policies that fit your family's needs. That's the kind of approach we want. We want a real marketplace out there. Right now, what we got is such a Washington bureaucratic focused approach to health care. It's driving up the cost. And I always start from this premise: when Obamacare is gone, health care will be better and less expensive. So repeal. Let's start from that premise. We know that I call them the nine lies of Obamacare. The different things we were told when this was passed that the Democrats used. You like your plan, you keep your plan. Like your doctor, keep your doctor. Premiums will go down. Premiums will go down on average $2,500. Deductibles will go down. The website was going to work. The website was secure. Emergency room visits will go down. They've actually went up. The 23 co-ops that they formed, 18 of them have already went bankrupt. These are supposed to be this wonderful new way to deliver health care. So everything we were told about this thing turned out to be false. So start from the premise, when you repeal it, healthcare will be better and less expensive. And then what we can get in on market-oriented replacement and to help the marketplace work even better, that's in addition, and that's all good, and we should push for that. But let's repeal it.
So bottom line is, nothing we were told about Obamacare was true.
Not a darn thing. Well, remember Jonathan Gruber. For goodness sake, he had the videotapes where he told us, you know, we were all dummies and that he was the, quote, architect, according to, I think, the Washington Post, the architect of Obamacare. He was caught on tape saying, yeah, we misled everyone. We didn't tell them the truth. We pulled one over on the American people because we had to. Well, they were so right. You know, what's the old adage?
Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. Well, it's time to fix it.
The gap is when a high-ranking bureaucrat tells the truth, right? That's what happened with Gruber. So,
Jim Jordan, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you, and we're gonna track this closely.
All right, Tony, take care. Thanks.
All right, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio. All right, coming up next, we're going to check in with State Senator Brandon Smith from Kentucky about the pro-life measures that state is pushing. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like markets might be taking a little bit of a pause here today, waiting for Wednesday's anticipated press conference by President-elect Donald Trump. I think the markets just want to make sure they hear what they heard during the campaign. It needs to be reiterated to the market so they can feel good again. Maybe that's what they're looking for. I'm not sure. But certainly, that is one explanation that we are hearing for a bit of a pause in the markets. Apparently, there are reports coming out of Iraq that exports are going through the southern oil port of Basra, which is looking at the highest levels of exports in 4 years, 3.5 million barrels a day. So maybe Iraq thought it wasn't going to be counted if they took it down south, but it is, and they are stressing that they will still hit their 210,000 barrel a day limit this month. Well, they're running out of time, so I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe they're going to have to just not count a week or so of the month, but that certainly is calling into question some of the halt that we are seeing. The big news, small business sentiment soars to a 12-year high. The best number we've seen in a long time, and it breaks the 42-year average of 98.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Back in November, the Kentucky voters, for the first time since 1920, gave control of the state house to Republicans, giving them control of the legislative branch and the executive branch. And they're wasting no time in advancing good conservative legislation. In fact, they put to the top of their list not only religious liberty and rights of conscience, but the governor signed into law two pro-life bills, one a 20-week abortion ban. That's the fetal pain bill. After a baby feels pain at that point, abortion can't do it. The governor signed that into law. They did a ultrasound bill, law now, that women considering abortion have to be given a sonogram. Well, join me now to discuss these bills and the pro-life advancements made in the Bluegrass State is State Senator Brandon Smith. Senator Smith, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, good evening to you.
Hey, congratulations on the passing your legislation on the pain-capable bill that's been moving across the country, and good to see Kentucky, a conservative pro-life state, join the other states in passing that.
Yeah, I really think that if the climate had not changed in Frankfort, that we probably would have never been able to pass legislation of this nature with the assembly set up the way it had been. So these changes in November opened the door for us to be able to put Kentucky back on a good, square, conservative track.
Now, your governor has provided that leadership. It's been refreshing to see what's coming out of Kentucky, but not everybody is excited. The ACLU filing suit just moments after the governor signed these bills together. They've taken action against the ultrasound bill. Now, what about the pain-capable bill? They're trying to stop that as well?
Well, just looking at what they've done in other states, we've not seen them jump on this in the last couple of states, so I don't think they will, but honestly, I'm not sure I have the same mindset as that group of individuals, so it's hard to predict what they will do.
Now, there's a third bill under consideration that would defund organizations which perform abortion. Where does that measure stand?
I'm not sure yet. Obviously, it's something that's of interest to Kentucky. This is a priority for us. So
I'm not exactly sure where that's at in the stage as far as coming to us on the floor.
Mm-hmm. What have you heard from your constituents since your pain capable bill passed and the governor signed it into law?
Well, we've had overwhelming support. I've had letters come in that are just so heartfelt. They're hard to get through. I mean, as a father, just reading some of these stories that people have, having lost a child and at least being able to hold it, and they feel very strongly that this child could hear them and that it would have felt pain, and they feel some level of comfort and closure with a bill like this. To people calling me Saddam Hussein or saying I'm evil because I want to do this, and the latest fake news propaganda for us has been this drive on social media to tell people that a rapist in the case of a pregnancy can now sue the mom and get involved in this lawsuit, which is not true. But that seems to be the thing they'd rather talk about rather than the fact that we have now saved some of the most innocent among us from such a horrible, horrible fate.
Yeah, truth never gets in their way. That's one thing they don't worry about. Senator Smith, I have to assume that, as you mentioned, the changes that took place after the election in November, as the House now in Republican hands, you got to be pretty optimistic about some of the initiatives that will be forthcoming in the state of Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing about Kentucky. I mean, we're a commonwealth, so we're a little different setup than some of the other states, but we know what doesn't work here. Very often, Kentucky winds up at the top of every list we should be at the bottom of, and at the bottom of every list we should be at the top of. So we know that 100 years of just Democrat control has failed us miserably. We have some of the highest counties of unemployment in the nation. We've got almost 16,000 minors and their families without work, thanks to the overreach of the EPA. So we have suffered disproportionately under this last administration. So I think that now people are ready. They're ready for a conservative agenda. They want to get back to work. They want to see the government take care of the children and provide good schools and have good roads and get back to what sets up the atmosphere for good jobs and good life quality.
Well, and that's I believe that's my philosophy of government: get out of the way so the people can get it done. And that's what we see happening in state after state. Senator Smith, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. And once again, congratulations on passing your 20-week abortion ban bill.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your show.
All right. State Senator Brandon Smith of Kentucky. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, tonight, I'm sure you've probably got this in your iPhone as a reminder that President Barack Obama will be giving his farewell address to the nation. I want to know if you're going to be watching tonight. And if so, what do you expect him to say? What do you expect the president to say tonight as he bids the nation farewell? Let's talk about it when we return. 866-372-7234. We're back after this.
Can a Facebook post save a life? Or a tweet or an Instagram picture? At Family Research Council's 12th annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, pro-life activists from around the country will gather to explore the impact that digital media has on the culture of human life. Watch free online the morning of Friday, January 27th from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, activists, and testimonies from families and individuals who choose life. At the intersection of cutting-edge technology and a passion for the lives of the unborn, you'll be educated and empowered to better reach your community on platforms like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and more. You'll be better prepared to make an impact for the pro-life movement anytime and anywhere. Also, see live coverage from the National Mall as the March for Life gets underway. Tune in on January 27th at frc.org/prolifecon. Again, visit frc.org/prolifecon for more information.
I think that we are called not to worry about our finances as long as we are honoring and pleasing God with those same finances.
Stewardship matters, even in these uncertain times.
God is faithful to help us weather the storms.
Visit afastore.net to find the DVD Financial Preparation for Uncertain Times with Dan Celia and all the resources of the AFA Cultural Institute.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Meet Dan Steiner, president of Preborn.
Jill came into our center about 8 months ago, and she was in a really difficult spot because her boyfriend was incarcerated. She didn't have a place to live. She's out on the street. She came into our center, and when she saw her baby on the ultrasound, she says, "I've got to find a way to do this." She changed from abortion-minded to wanting to choose life for her baby, and that's where we came in, coming beside that ultrasound with baby clothes, with housing for her. Her baby just delivered last Wednesday. It's a little boy. He's beautiful. That's the power of ultrasound. That's what your gift of $140 does. Five times, five free ultrasounds for women like Jill. Five babies born. Would you help us today?
80% of abortion-minded mothers choose life when they see an ultrasound of their baby. You can give now at 877-616-2396 or at afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. I hope you're paying attention. The president tonight going to be giving his farewell address to the nation. Are you ready? Are you going to be watching? Are you interested in what he has to say? What do you think he will say? What do you think he'll say? 866-372-7234. And let's go to Missouri where Mark is on the line. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. Not going to be watching the president tonight. I think it'll be another example of the president trying to rewrite history, so to speak, with things that he claims that he's done and things that have taken place during his presidency. And much of what we've heard over the past 60 days, you know, since the election. So I think we'd be better off as a nation spending time with our family and witnessing to others or praying or whatever a person saw fit to do.
Well, I think there's going to be so much spinning going on. It's going to look like a top. I mean, the president is going to be trying to salvage of course, the media is going to help him, Mark. There's no question. The media is going to be, you know, just declaring how great his presidency was. But again, they don't live in reality either. He is going to do everything he can to salvage his legacy. Bottom line. Mark, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you listening. Let's go to Virginia, where Emma is on the line. Emma, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. I will not be watching. I agree with the first caller that it's just going to be more of the same false narrative that we've heard for the past 8 years. And it might make me laugh if it weren't so infuriating to think that people are actually going to believe, you know, the false narrative that race relations are better than, you know, while he's been in office, or that it's not a gun problem or gang problem or social problem in Chicago, it's the police problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sad to know that there are some in our culture still that accept that as truth.
So do you think he's basically going to be, like, just talking to his supporters?
I think so. I think he's kind of setting that up to lay the groundwork for, you know, his plan. I think he still wants to fight for his so-called legacy. And I think that we're not going to hear the last of him or from him with this farewell speech.
I think you're absolutely right. I think he will be much different than George W. Bush, who basically just kind of went away. You didn't hear from him. He didn't interject himself, gave the president, President Obama, a wide berth, let him come in and didn't comment on him. I would not be surprised to see this outgoing president repeatedly commenting on moves that Donald Trump makes, decisions that he makes that he disagrees with. Emma, I think you're right. Emma, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate you calling in today. All right, let's go to Texas where Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Are you going to be watching tonight?
Oh, absolutely not. I can read all the lies in the paper tomorrow.
I'm certain it'll be wall to wall tomorrow with them playing clips of him and people out in the audience crying with the notion that he's going to be leaving office.
I can't stand his voice. I can't stand to listen to it because it's one of these things that it's like every time his lips are moving, he's lying. I hate to be that cynical about anyone, but the man's actions speak for themselves. You know, he's had one of the most scandal-ridden administrations in the history of this country. He has absolutely no leadership skills. And he's made this country, he's made a mockery of America and her place in the world. I cannot respect that. I respect the office that he holds.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no respect for the man.
All right, Carol. Thanks for listening. Always great to talk with you. Thanks for calling in today. Everything has value. You know, and I've thought about this. You know, what has this president done? I mean, he's got to have done something that is of merit, of value. Now, I know I had to think hard, but I think he has reminded us that freedom is not free. And I'm not talking about just the men and women who serve to protect freedom, and I'm grateful for them, but he has reminded us that as citizens, if we don't pay attention, we'll lose what we have. And I think he's reminded us of what can happen when we take a wrong turn as a nation, which we did, I think, when he was elected, and people kind of just let things go, and people stepped back until it got so bad with his continued attacks on religious freedom, his continually pushing his liberal agenda through our nation's military, through our schools. I mean, you know, again, look, I won't have time to go down the whole list of things that he's done, but, you know, forcing this gender confusion on our children in our public schools through the Department of Education. I mean, you just go, it's a litany of things that he has done. And it is. I think what he did do is that by how bad he was, it awakened something within the American people to fight for this republic once again. And the evidence is what happened in this election. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that he brought us to a point that we were desperate enough to do something about it. Now, I hope that's a reminder to everybody that this thing only works if you're involved. Like you recall the story of Benjamin Franklin after they came out of the Constitutional Convention and he was asked by a lady, Mr. Franklin, what have you given us? And he responded, a republic, if you can keep it. And that's a part of the challenge we have, is that we have to stay involved and engaged. We have to be participants in this process. American government is not a spectator sport. Living in a republic is not a spectator sport. It is a participant-driven undertaking. You have to be a part of it. And you're doing that in part by listening, but you have to act upon what you hear, what you know to be true. You have to live it out in your families. You've got to teach your children. You've got to live it out in your communities. You need to support candidates, be a candidate, speak out. Do not be afraid. That's one thing that I am grateful even to right now. I'm waiting to see what happens with the Trump administration. Optimistic, but cautious. But at least he's emboldened Americans to speak out once again and quit cowering down because you're not politically correct. Political correct stuff is killing us. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Tennessee, where Shirley has been patiently waiting. Shirley, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. I will not be watching for all of the reasons stated above, and I fully expect Obama to heroize himself like he always does and talk all about how wonderful his policies have been and how he's helped make America great and all of this. And he's not only going to heroize himself, but he's also going to speak as if he's some sort of African-American hero, when in actuality, as an African-American myself, he's done absolutely nothing for African-Americans in his whole term. As a matter of fact, we're worse off, and he's going to say some things that get more people to fight and march with Black Lives Matter. And I think he's going to rile people up into a frenzy and get them to hating each other more and more racist statements. And I also think that they're right. This is not the end of them. And I just think that his speech is going to be worthless. It's going to be a bunch of lies. He's going to talk about, probably may mention Trump and some of his policies, but not by name. You know how he does it politically. And say how he disagrees with them and we need to fight. And I expect him to do more of that type of talk because that's him. And he'll probably do it wearing a wig and fishnet hose and a turban and some lipstick. And Michelle will probably be sitting beside him looking like a man, knowing them. I'm just quoting Joan Rivers. Thank you.
Okay, Shirley, thank you. Appreciate the call. This is an opportunity for the president, President Obama. Because think about this. Actually, Shirley touched on a couple important points there about stirring things up. The president could actually say, hey, look, we had an election. In America, we have elections. And we have peaceful transference of power. And, you know, there's all these things out there about how they're going to march on Washington and they're going to try to disrupt this. He should make it very clear to people that, look, you need to respect this process, and you might not like the outcome, but you need to respect the process. And he could do a lot to basically tamp down, what could potentially be rioting and other stuff. We saw right after the election. You know, this is his opportunity to do that, to actually show that he cares about America more than about himself and his liberal ideology and the agenda that he's been pushing. We'll see. We'll see if he does that. All right, let's go to Texas where Roger is on the line. Roger, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I do enjoy listening to you almost every day in my commute to and from, or from work, actually, in the afternoon.
Well, thank you.
You know, when you asked that question, are you going to watch him? I actually did a fairly deep belly laugh and said, are you kidding me? And I thought, well, I'll just call. And I certainly would add my vote of no confidence for the outgoing president. And as many have said, I think I fully expect what to hear from him, the same kind of things he's done for so long, including perhaps how he will say, you know, if I had been on the ballot, I probably would have won. I've turned him off so many times lately as I've heard comments that he has made, and I certainly don't need to hear any more of what he's said repeatedly over the years. And I'm fearful, too, that he's just going to stay around and stay involved. And truthfully, I don't think he respects the process, which you are hoping he would say you need to as a nation. I don't think he does, frankly. I don't think he would be acting as he does right now and saying what he's likely to say tonight if, in fact, he respected the process?
Well, we will find out, Roger. We'll find out. And as I often do, I'll say, you know, we watch it so you won't have to. I'll be watching tonight. In fact, again, if you're on Twitter, I'll kind of be giving out my thoughts. It's at T Perkins. If you tweet, you can get my thoughts in real time as I watch President Obama give his farewell address. I do like the sound of that, farewell address. All right, let's go to California where Bruce is on the line. We're getting another caller here. Bruce, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, Pastor Tony. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, man. I don't know if you remember me. I'm one of the pure clergy council with Star Parker, and we had a press conference together in 07.
Yes.
We were trying to get the marriage amendment passed. And we went to Capitol Hill and went to Senator Obama's office when he called us ignorant black preachers. He was tired of us coming to talk to him and try to get him to change his mind. That was before we knew who he was. And when then he told us he was going to fundamentally change America, and certainly he has. Thank God for you and your program and all you do. And when the gentleman asked me earlier, kind of caught me, said, are you going to be watching? I said, well, no. But then I realized I have to watch as one of the pastors, one of the watchmen on the wall, like you, to find out exactly, you know, the rhetoric. Of course, he's going to toe the company line, as they say. And praise God that we got to know what he's doing. He's going to be living 1,000 feet from the largest mosque in the eastern United States. I believe he's going to put on his turban and do his thing after he gets out of office. But that's just my own opinion. You know, I'm not mad at him. I pray for him every day that God will change his heart, change his life. And we in the church, we know what commission to do. That's all I got to say, man. I just want to thank you so much. I'll hopefully be out for the March for Life the following week in D.C., and I look forward to seeing you again sometime.
All right, Bruce, great to hear from you. Thanks so much. And, yes, we'll be looking for you. Hopefully we'll see you up here in just a couple of weeks. Well, folks, I will be watching. And I'll let you know. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that he will go out with class and he will appeal to America, even though they, you know, his supporters lost. Hillary Clinton did not win, will not be able to continue his failed policies. And maybe he will speak to those that have been a part of disrupting things and say, hey, look, folks, you don't like it. I don't like it, but it's the process. We'll see. We'll see. I could be wrong. Probably will be, but we'll see. Again, on Twitter, at T. Perkins. Well, we're just about out of time, so sorry we're not going to be able to get to the rest of the calls, but Lord willing, they'll be tomorrow. And I'll be back. I hope you will be back as well. We'll be talking tomorrow. The Open Doors releases their report on the persecution of Christians globally. Dr. David Currie is going to be with me. We're going to talk about that and a lot more tomorrow here on Washington Watch. So I hope you'll be back with us. Until then, I leave you once again with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.